Wells' titles was temporary. Eisner was feeling drained by the day's events by the time he met Katzenberg at the restaurant. He brought along the two memos that Wells had been working on, one describing Katzenberg's new responsibilities and one discussing giving him 1.4 million stock options. Eisner started talking about dividing Wells' responsibilities. Katzenberg could take the record division, the venture with the telephone companies, interactive video. Katzenberg said nothing. As he sat and listened, his expression hardened. He realized that Eisner was dumping what he considered every money-losing pain-in-the-ass business on him. Anything that really mattered, strategic planning, finance, legal, would now be reporting to Eisner. Katzenberg let him go on. "And Jeffrey," Eisner finally said, "we've got to close your deal." "Why don't we let the dust settle?" Katzenberg suggested, fighting to control his anger and disappointment. Eisner seemed relieved to do just that and put the folder away. Katzenberg was now in such a state of disbelief that the rest of the evening passed in a blur as he and Eisner carried on as though it were just another one of their Monday dinners. The promise at Aspen was never mentioned, nor was the presidency of Disney. As Katzenberg later put it, it was as though an elephant were sitting in a third chair at the table, and neither of them said anything about it. Katzenberg didn't sleep that night. At times he was so angry he felt short of breath. It wasn't just that he had been denied the presidency he felt he'd been promised. It was that Eisner had ignored him. He wouldn't face up to him. He wasn't being honest. That was something Katzenberg couldn't accept. The next morning, Eisner called Katzenberg to discuss a contract with David Hoberman, the head of Touchstone. Katzenberg couldn't believe Eisner was just going on with business as usual. He said he had to speak to him, and it was urgent. It was the first time in their 19 years of working together that Katzenberg had ever made such a demand. The two met for lunch in a private dining room off the rotunda. "What's going on?" Eisner asked. "I don't get it," Katzenberg said, barely able to contain himself. He reminded Eisner of his promise at Aspen that if anything ever happened to Wells, he would be number two. "Tell me that you meant it," he said, "or tell me that you've changed your mind. Just be honest." "What's the alternative?" Eisner asked, which infuriated Katzenberg. "If you can't tell me after 19 years, if you can't tell me, then you've told me everything I need to know about my future. I've hit the ceiling. I have to move on." "Are you putting a gun to my head?" Eisner's voice rose. "Just be honest with me," Katzenberg pleaded. He said he couldn't believe that Eisner had come to the previous night's dinner as though nothing had changed. Wells were still alive, and they were discussing some new responsibilities and a contract for Katzenberg. He was hurt, he said, that Eisner hadn't offered him the presidency Saturday night or Sunday, but that he assumed Eisner's taking the job was a short-term corporate thing. "I was amazed that you didn't bring it up at dinner last night," he said. "After 19 years together, I've earned the right to be your partner." "I'd rather not discuss this now," Eisner said. "Let's concentrate on Frank." "You can trust me to be as good as Frank," Katzenberg insisted. The reference to trust unleashed Eisner. "I trust you," he said, "but not the way I trusted Frank.